Morning, everyone. Today's daf is Sota's daf Vav. Thank Lupin for additional sponsorship of the daf. Daf is on the Zech Nishmas Liba Gabriel Bashmuel. We're in Haman Base. We're going to start again at the two dots. We started this yesterday. Let's start it again. We go back to the din of the Mishnah. The Mishnah has taught us that once a woman is a Sota Safek. Now, again, my terminology that I use, Sota Safek versus Sota Vadai, it's classic terminology. It just simply means Sota Safek means that she went through the process of kinu and stira. She was warned by her husband not to be with this man in front of two witnesses. She was warned, she then secluded herself with this man in front of two witnesses. She's now officially a Sota. She's formally a Sota. She's also to her husband, even though we do not know what occurred in that room. But there's a preponderance of evidence now where she is a sota, and from this point going forward, she is also to her husband until she drinks the mei sota. Sota vada, on the other hand, is a sota who committed adultery and witnesses saw the actual act of adultery. So she was mizanah, she committed adultery, and it's known, so that's what's called the sota vada. The Mishnah focusing on the sota safek, on the woman who secluded herself with a man in front of two witnesses after having been warned by her husband. So the Mishnah concludes by saying that in the event that her husband dies, they're still married, husband and wife, he needs to divorce her, but if he dies before divorcing her, and there's a surviving brother, and there's a mitzvah of yibum, so the Mishnah says chalitza no yibum. That's the psak that's given in the Mishnah, to which the Gemara now says we are on the two dots on Hayamid Beis choletzes v'lo misya bemes. So, no, thank you. Oh, wow, thank you. So the imeis choletzes amaitis yabe nami yibum. So the Gemara says, and why not let the brother-in-law do yibum? Meaning clearly there's a zika. There's a connection between her and her brother-in-law. That's clear. Because there's chalitza. So if there's chalitza, so why not allow a yibum to be done? I'm Rav Yosef. I'm a krav. So the Gemara quotes Rav Yosef, who quotes the pasuk regarding divorce. The Torah, in its description of divorce, says that she leaves the house, she goes to another, le'ish acher, to an outsider, to an outside man, le'ish acher v'lo le'yavim. And the drash is, she goes to an outside man, but she doesn't go to the yavim. What's going on over here? So we need to see Rashi. Rashi really helps us understand how this drasha works. Look at Rashi v'yatsa mi'beiso, le'alminei ksiv, Rashi writes that above, just above in the Torah, kimatza be'ervas davar. Why did they get a divorce? So the Torah describes because he found with his wife ervas davar, meaning that she misbehaved, and she's an erva. Okay, so the yatsa mi'beiso, so he says, okay, this marriage obviously is not working out. Because she committed adultery, doesn't dissolve the marriage. Only two things dissolve a marriage: death or divorce. So he excuses her with a divorce. Leisha acher, lamil lemichtav. Now the Torah then goes on to describe. Now in the context of this, the Torah says she goes on to another man. But if the Torah's whole point is that she's going to go on to another man, so why not just simply say she goes on leish to another man? Why does the Torah have to say the word acher? Rashi says that's what Rav Yosef is focusing on. If the whole point of the Torah was just simply she can remarry, so just simply say, okay, she goes on to a man, meaning obviously it's another man. Why does the Torah have to go out of its way to say the word la'acher? So it must be that it's an exclusion. The word acher is telling us that she has to go to an outsider, excluding somebody who's an insider. Now in this context, in this discussion, who's an outsider and who's an insider? In this discussion, the Yavam is an insider. Why is he an insider? Rashi goes on to explain. So if he finds Ervas Davar, again, she misbehaved, so he's going to divorce her. And she leaves the house. Now even though in the pasuk obviously it's talking about divorce, it's clear from the pasuk it's talking about divorce, but in this context it means any way she leaves the house, either through death or divorce. Beinai de gershin, beinai de misa. Im batli nasei, leish acher tinasei. So now that she's leaving a marriage because she misbehaved, so now who can she marry? Only an outsider, not an insider. V'lo liyavim she'enu acher eitzol nisuin shelzu. The yavim is not considered acher, is not considered an outsider. Why? Shemikoach nisu rei rishon hin niskek eslo. Because remember, the whole principle of yibum is that the marriage of yibum happens automatically. It's only as a result of her marriage to the deceased brother that the surviving brother is now connected to her. So, and as we've discussed time and again throughout Masechet Yomos, he's really just an extension of the brother, so he's considered an insider. So this woman who is now leaving the marriage as a result of an erva, so now she can only marry an outsider, she can't marry an insider. And even though the parsha is talking about divorce, but Rashi points out that in the level of drush, in the level of drasha, we're expanding the idea to death or divorce. Okay, that's the drasha of Rav Yosef. That's how you know that you cannot do yibum. Which only begs the next question. We continue. We're back in the Gemara. Okay, good. You can't do yibum. If you can't do yibum, you can't do chalitza. Meaning they go hand in hand. Right? For lack of a better term, there's a marriage between yibum and chalitza. And if there's no yibum, should there not be no chalitza? So amalei ilu aisa labal milo baye get. So the Gemara says no, not so fast. Because had the husband still been alive, so the marriage isn't dissolved by itself, as we discussed just a moment ago. The marriage has to terminate with a divorce. Well, the husband's no longer there. The yavam is in place of the husband, since the original husband had to terminate the marriage through divorce. So the yavam has to do chalitza. So hashanami tibay chalitza. Okay, so therefore the surviving brother has to do chalitza, since the original brother would have had to have done divorce. Okay, this is going to be answer number one to the question. The question is why chalitza? Why not yibum? And when I say this is answer number one, there are three more answers coming up. The next two answers are going to be other versions of Rav Yosef. It's basically going to be the same point, just articulated a little bit differently in the next two rounds. And then in the fourth round of answer, it's going to be Rav. Rav is going to give a totally different approach in terms of why chalitza, why no yibum. Before we go on in the Gemara, just to clarify one point, which really speaks to the fundamental distinction between Sota Safek and Sota Vaday, which I've been drilling since the beginning of the Masechta. If she were a Sota Vaday, okay, for a moment, let's just discuss. Let's leave our discussion over here, not leave it, but let's just move it over a little bit to where she's a Sota Vaday. And again, that means that witness is actually saw she committed adultery. She was Mizana. So under those circumstances, if let's say she's a Sota Vaday, she definitively committed adultery, it's known, witnesses, and then the husband dies. What then? Is there Yibum? So clearly it's not going to be Yibum. That question we know. Is there going to even be Chalitza? The answer to that is no. There's not going to be chalitza. Take a look at the second to last.
She's on death row. Why would
no. Well, let's assume that there wasn't warning. There wasn't. In other words, just because she was mezana does not necessarily mean she's going to be put to death. There are a lot of things that can impede that. Okay, but another.
Wouldn't have to give her a get.
Huh?
She's alive.
If she were alive, her husband would have to give her a get. But look at Tosus, because Tosus is going to teach us that under those circumstances, there's no yibum and there's no chalitza. And then what we're going to have to do is, again, make a very clear delineation, although it's not that clear, but we're going to have to make a delineation between a Sota Vaday and a Sota Safek. Second to last Tosus on the Amud. Ilu Isa Labal Milo Baiget. Hiksha Rebbe B'Shem Rabbi Avram Ben Bart Mordechai Zichrono Levercha. V'asota Vadais V'aylan Is Hecha Dehikar Baal V'eshet Sriz Debao Get Mi Baal Hecha De'isa V'afilo Hachi Paturus Mi Yibum Below Chalitza. If she was for sure a Mizana, so the Gemara in Yavamos teaches us that she doesn't need Yibam, she doesn't need Chalitza. A period, done. And if the husband were alive, she would need a get from her husband. The act of Znus doesn't dissolve the marriage. And yet, meanwhile, the husband dies and there's a Yavam. That's it. She goes off. She's an Erva. She goes away with no Yibam and no Chalitza. And so over here, huh? She can marry somebody else.
So the
Yesh Latarit. So Tosa says it's the answer. It's the only answer, but you have to say it, and we're going to say it out loud. Sota Vadais Lo Dami Lahacha. That the Sota Vadais is not comparable to the Sota Suffolk. Kaven De Tuma Sosam Harehi Keirva Gemura. So when it comes to the Sota Vadais, so there's a designation for her. She's an Erva Gemura. And as we've discussed in the beginning of Masechta Yevamos, what happens to all the arayos? All the arayos go free. There's no zika. There's no yibum. There's no chalitza. A sota vadais is an erva. Therefore, she goes free. The xeris akasovhi, the peturos, the eishes riz v'aylan is hecha di isla baal sharalei, the afilu hachima beber kamed yevamos midin yevam delot tzarich bukla. Aval sota safek. Okay, I know I glossed over that, but I'm just focusing on the basic distinction. Aval sota safek lo imaot. But when it comes to sota safek, she's not excluded from yibum, meaning she's still in the parsha. And just it's, I know it's hard, but we're going to wrap our head around this idea that even though she's usher to her husband, she is not designated as an erva. She's usher to her husband, but she's not an erva. Okay, it's a concept. It really requires thought and time. And okay, elagabe isura debal. I'm sorry, elagabe isura debal. That's exactly Tosus's point. She's usher to her husband because she went through kinu and stira. But she is not. She does not have the label of erva. The kamashalan kara came under bamikoch nisua achiv harei b'makom bal dasur lo liyavam avachalitza bay. Good, and that's exactly what the drush is. The drush is teaching us that despite the fact that she's asked to her husband, there still is going to be a requirement of chalitza. Okay, Adkan, and again, it really this opportunity gives us a chance to pause and to really contemplate this idea, the difference between a sota vada and a sota safek. Sota vada, she's an erva. Sota safek, also to her husband, but she does not have the designation of an erva. Okay, good. Let's go on to the Gemara. East Amri. So again, four answers to this simple question of why chalitza, why no yibum, and the first three answers are just different versions of Rav Yosef's answer. Am Rav Yosef Rechman Am Rav Yatsam Yibesav Achav Yisli Yishacher Dola Lister Lebesay. What exactly is the Torah driving at when the Torah says get rid of her? Torah says, look, she's a homewrecker, meaning while married to this man, she committed adultery, or at least allegedly committed adultery, enough so that she's now asked to her husband. She's a homewrecker. And so the Torah says, what you do with her is you get her out. She's destroying the house. And now what are you telling me? Okay, fine. But if the husband dies, she should do yibum. No, she's a homewrecker. So if she's a homewrecker, so why would you allow her to do yibum and just wreck another home?
So why do chalitza?
Right.
And I don't understand why does that contradict the first one.
It's not a contradiction. It's a second answer to the same question. It's resolving
the first one. He says, you know,
the conclusion.
She needed a get, so she needs chalitza, and he says she's a homewrecker.
Right.
So give a chalitza.
That's exactly the point. We're answering the same question. It
doesn't need anything.
No. I'm sorry. If I did say that, then I misspoke. No. You're not going to do yibum because she's a homewrecker, but you'll have to do chalitza. Yes. So Amalei Abaye Lamiatalache Lo Tinase Dola Lister Lebeise. So Abaye says, okay, if she's a homewrecker, so then why are you allowing her to marry anybody? But the answer. Amar le top of vav and aleph mi karamina le alaha bakarche. So the Gemara says, look, we'll make a basic distinction between the yavam and anybody else. Anybody else, buyer beware. In other words, somebody else wants to take her in, give her a second chance. That's fine. And in fact, he knows what he's getting himself into. He's taking the risk. That's fine. For the Yavam, remember, the whole mitzvah of Yibam is Balkarche. It's not Balkarche. It's Balkarche in the sense that he doesn't have an option, meaning the mitzvah presents itself, and he's got to do the mitzvah. Can't be that she destroys one home, and you now are basically instructed to go ahead and take her in. That can't be. So therefore, there's no mitzvah of Yibam. But again, there's no mitzvah of Yibam, but still there's no mitzvah of Chalitza. Igad Army, now here we go, round three of Rav Yosef's answer. Again, the question that in the event that she becomes a Sota Suffolk, and the husband dies, so there's going to be Yibam and not Chalitza. So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, there's going to be Chalitza and not Yibam. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yosef, answer number three, Akas of Karu Acher. She'ein bein zugo sharishon shezeh hotzi risha mebeso v'zihichnes risha l'soch beso v'at amar tizya beinami yevomei. So it's basically the same idea, right? Basically, he's getting this rishos out of his house, and now the expectation is that the brother-in-law is supposed to take it in. So amalei abaye ela me'ata nisus l'acher umeis b'lo banim lo tizya b'imda k'siv karo acher gabei dahai. I'm sorry, Acher Gabei. So the Gemara now suggests, well, look, if the whole idea is that she misbehaved, she wrecked the home, and the only one she can marry is Acher, an outsider, and not an insider, so the Gemara now is contemplating, maybe, let's suggest, that in the event that she marries another person, this quote-unquote Acher, and he dies, maybe what the Gemara is suggesting is that maybe the Acher's brother shouldn't do the mitzvah of Yibam. So the Gemara says, no. Dahai mia b'shem tov havakaima. So the Gemara says, no. It's only because she left this marriage disgraced. She left this marriage, meaning the original marriage, because she was mizana, or at least allegedly mizana. So under those circumstances, then the brother has no mitzvah of yibum. But if she goes in the second chance in life, and she does, and she marries, and she behaves herself in that second marriage, so obviously that's not going to disqualify the brother of the second marriage from doing the mitzvah of yibum. Okay, adkan. Okay, so that takes us through the three rounds of Rav Yosef. Question, why is it that by the sota, there's no mitzvah of yibum, but there is a requirement of chalitza? So essentially, all three answers point to the same basic idea, and that is that you cannot ask the brother to marry her after she committed at least enough znus, or enough alleged znus, to answer to the original husband. You really can't ask the brother to then take him in. The Torah wouldn't do that. So it's almost like, the Gemara doesn't say this, but it's almost like darched darchei Noam, meaning the Torah is too nice. Torah is not going to ask the brother to have to take her in. Instruct the brother to take her in. So therefore, there's no mitzvah of yibum. There's still a mitzvah of chalitza because there's still a zika. She was still married to the original husband. The original husband would have to given her a divorce. Here too, the brother-in-law is going to give her a divorce as well. That's essentially the three answers of Rav Yosef.
That's one of the reasons. Otherwise, she likes her brother-in-law, so she would do
mezana,
and then the
fourth okay. Yibum. Okay, could be. Okay.
Rabbinic decree?
It's
because if she marries him anyway, it works, right?
That's a good question. So the first round of Rav Yosef, he quoted a pasuk. In round two and three of Rav Yosef, he didn't quote a pasuk. I'm thinking off the cuff, but maybe that the difference between the first versus the second and third answer of Rav Yosef is maybe whether it's d'oraisa or whether it's d'rabbanan. Again, I just thought of that off the cuff. I don't know if that's right.
So to understand that the witness to mezana without warning can have a normal life.
She'll go on. I mean, but this marriage went normal life. Her marriage is going to have to get her marriage is going to have to come to an end.
But the fact is that she can marry somebody else and have normal life.
Right.
While she was a mezana, witness mezana.
Right.
How could it be?
What do you mean? How could it be?
So she was witness mezana.
Yeah. Good. Okay.
So the husband divorces her because she wasn't warned.
Right.
But she can marry somebody else without any problems.
Okay. I mean, again, without any problems. I mean, and the next husband she's going to find is going to know what he's getting himself into. It's going to be hard for her. I mean, that's just okay. That's just the.
Can she marry the man that she was?
Okay, no, you're right. Correct. Okay, let's go on. Rav Amar Kavachomer. Okay, now here we get to another approach to the same dilemma. How come the brother-in-law must do chalitza with her, and how come there's no yibum? Okay, this approach over here is going to be, although it's only 6-7 lines of Gemara, it's going to be a little difficult. Let's work our way through it. Rav Amar Kavachomer. So Rav says it's really built on a Kavachomer, and the Kavachomer works like this: Im ne'esra b'mutar la, ba'asar la kol shekein. That's the Kavachomer. It's a flawless Kavachomer. It just requires thought. If she becomes asr to someone who's mutter to her, she for sure is going to be asr to somebody who's already asr to her. Okay, great. could say it 10 times over. It's a flawless kavachomer. But let's think it through now. She obviously is mutter to her husband. Then she becomes a sota. Sota suffix, our mission of sota. Right? Kinu and stira. Okay, but with kinu and stira, she becomes asr to her husband. So she originally was mutter to her husband, now she's asr to her husband. Now let's translate that to her brother-in-law. Her brother-in-law, she starts off as being asr to her brother-in-law. Once she marries her husband, she is asr to her brother-in-law. That's an erva. So now, if she becomes asr to that which she is mutter to, meaning her husband, she for sure is going to be asr to somebody who she already is asr to, i.e. her brother-in-law. The Kavachomer of Rava. So Amalei Abaye Elamiyatza, so Abaye says to Rava, let's see, I'm going to try to plug in your Kavachomer to other circumstances and show you that, although your Kavachomer would work, but we know the halacha doesn't say so. For example, Elamiyatza Kohen Gadol Shekidesh Es HaAmana. Let's start off with a scenario where Kohen Gadol is Mikadesh a widow. Shouldn't do that. Okay, not allowed. Kohen Gadol can only marry a Besula, and he doesn't. He marries an Amana. So he's in the wrong. Umes. And then this Kohen Gadol dies. V'yesh lo ach Kohen Hedjot. And he's got a regular brother who's a Kohen Hedjot. Now for this regular brother who's a Kohen Hedjot, he's allowed to marry his sister-in-law because she's an Amana. She's not a Grusha. Two times over. Katlanis. Okay. I'm ignoring that point. moving along. So she's a but she's only an amana. She's not a grusha. So now lo tisyabim. According to you, Rava, there should be no yibum, right? Because imnes Rabbi Mutar la beisola lo kol shekain. Because just plug in your kavachomer. She was.
Not really,
good. You're good. You already figured out the answer. She was muteris to her husband, and then
only
she becomes
after the fact.
Right, and then she becomes usher. So if she becomes usher to her husband, lo kol shekain, how much more so she's going to be usher to her brother-in-law as well. Oh, okay, good. So Abaye says to Rava, you see, your kavachomer doesn't work. So ha asire v'kaima. So Rava says back, or the Gemara says back to Abaye, that's a terrible comparison. Meaning this amana to the Kohen Gadol already was usher. She was never allowed to marry the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol was never allowed to marry her. So mutar la usher la. Who? So the Gemara says, look, we need, if you want to challenge me, you need a scenario where she originally was mutter to her original husband, and then she becomes usher in the middle of the marriage. Okay, so right, correct. This is your example is not a good example. Ella. So the Gemara says, okay, I will come up with an example. Aishas Kohen Shenensa, the wife of a Kohen who unfortunately was violated. We know the halacha is that onus in general is muteris, but not for a Kohen. Kohen has an extra level of kedusha. If his wife is an anusa, it's a tragedy, but it's the halacha. The Kohen Gadol, I'm sorry, the wife of a Kohen is an anusa. She is no longer muteris to her husband. So Aishas Kohen Shenensa Umeis, and then the husband before divorcing her dies. So V'yeshla Ach Chalal. And here now is where it gets really tricky. So now this Kohen has a brother. The brother is a Chalal. First of all, how can there be two Kohanim where one has a Kohen with full Kedusha and the other brother is a Chalal? Phil kind of shrugged his shoulders because that's not so hard. That's not so complicated. There were two different mothers involved in the it was one father. One wife he married was kosher, legitimate, and the other wife that he married was a Grusha. Okay, so you can have the two sons, one being a Kohen with Kedusha and the other one being a Chalal. A Kohen totally devoid of Kedusha's Kahuna. So now, here's a scenario where the Kohen with Kedusha is married to this woman. She unfortunately was Nanas. Now he is usher to her. Good. So here we have, when I say good over here, I just simply mean, nothing's good. Just in the context of a match for the Kal v'Chomer, this is a match where she started off by being muteris to her husband. Then because of the Anusa, she's Asura to her husband. So now the Kal v'Chomer is, if she was usher to that which she's mutter to, she for sure should be usher to that which she's usher to, meaning her brother-in-law. And in such a circumstance, there should be no allowance for Yibum. Lo tisyabem. So imnes rabbe mutala be'asa lo la kol shekein.
Why couldn't she have married him? He was a chalal.
She's a chalal. Sure, she can marry a chalal.
Right.
So, but the problem is that if you use Rava's kavachomer, there should be no allowance for yibum. If she becomes usher to her husband, who was muteris to her, now she's usher. She for sure should be usher to her brother-in-law because again, before there was a yibum, there was an iser veishasach, and now that there was a, if she's usher to that her husband, she for sure should be usher to her brother-in-law. So the Gemara says, just give me a moment. Let's finish. Ones be Yisrael mishrei sharei the gabe dahai. So the Gemara says no, because don't call this an Isser to her brother-in-law. Her brother-in-law is a Chalal. So even though her brother-in-law has a name, Kohen, Katz, whatever you will, but her brother-in-law is not a Kohen, meaning a Kohen in name, but has no Kedushas Kahuna. Her brother-in-law is basically a Yisrael. A Kohen in name, but really Yisrael. There never was an Issa for her and her brother-in-law. Meaning, even though unfortunately she was an Anusa, and that does prohibit her to her current husband, it has no impact whatsoever with her potential Yavam. And so you cannot call this an Issa vis-a-vis her Yavam. And the Gemara says it's not going to be a match. And Rava's Kal v'Chomer stands to reason that if she is Usser, meaning, let's go back to our original point, the Sota Safek, where the woman's married and she becomes a Sota. She now becomes her husband, Usser to her husband. So Rava's Kal v'Chomer is, if she's Usser to her husband, who was muteris to her, she for sure is going to be Usser to her brother-in-law, who to begin with was Usser to her as well. And that's why there's no mitzvah of Yibam. Ultimately, by the way, we're going to have to fill in the rest of the story. Well, how come there's no? How come there is chalitza? In other words, how come the Kal V'Chomer does not have chalitza? And you're going to have to say the same thing that we said previously, even though the Gemara doesn't do that. Which is, well, there's no chalitza because if the husband were alive, he would have had to have given her a get. So therefore, the Yavam, who's in place of the husband, is going to have to do chalitza. Okay, we'll have to say that. Yeah, Danny, go ahead.
Parallel, because she is the source of her being is usher to her husband, but God is the source of her being usher to you.
Okay, all right, fine, but yeah, but I'm saying, but the Yisurim are all created by Kadosh Baruch Hu, meaning she's the reason why she's the one who kickstarted the Yisur. But when ultimately all said and done, the Yisur is because the Torah says she's usher. Now, she's not. I mean, she didn't invent the Yisur. You know, she caused the Yisur to happen. Let's start with the next Mishnah. We're on Vav Amud Aleph. The Eila Asur is Melechel B'Truma. These are the women who are prohibited from eating Truma. The Mishnah over here is obviously talking about where she's married to a Kohen. And as being a wife of a Kohen, she's entitled to eat Truma. But for the following reasons, however, she will be prohibited from eating Truma. HaOmer is number one. Tamei Anilach. She makes an admission. She says that she was Mizana. Number two, Shabau Edim Shi Tameya. Witnesses come and said that she committed adultery. Number three, Halmeris Eni Shosa. She refuses to drink. Meaning, she went through the process of Kinu and Stira, and they go to the base of Mikdash, and she says, you know what? I tap out. Okay? I'm not drinking. Meaning, whatever that means, it's basically an admission of guilt. I'm not drinking. Under those circumstances, that's it. She's prohibited from eating truma. Number four, Shabala Inarosa Lashkosa. Husband doesn't want her to drink. For whatever reason. In other words, she's a sura when she's a sota. She's a sura to eat truma until she drinks. If the husband doesn't want her to drink, she remains in that state of isra. Obviously now the only resolution is going to be that he's going to have to give her a get. But until that point in time, she can't eat truma. And finally, number five, Shabala Ba'ala Baderech. Let's say en route to the base of Mikdash, she's a sota. Again, kinu and stira. She was warned, she secluded herself with a man. Okay, now she's asur. She's asura until she drinks the mesota. Let's say en route to the base of Mikdash, so the husband, it's a husband and wife, even though she's asura to him, and his Yetzirah got the best of him, and they have relations on the way to the base of Mikdash. Under those circumstances, she's no longer going to drink the water. Take a look at the Rashi's, second Rashi in the Mishnah, the only two. Shabala bala baderech deshuv ein amayim bod kenosa. The water no longer would test her if, in fact, the husband had relations with her. Kidulakaman, we're going to see this later in the Masechta, about 3 weeks from now. V'nika ish me'avon bizman she'ish menuka shelo bala me'achar she'nasar alav. As ha'isha hi tisa savona. Ein ha'ish menuka me'avon. Rashi quotes a drasha. We'll see this drasha later on. That the only time that the water is going to properly test her is only when the husband is free of guilt, not of any sin, but specifically of with his wife. However, if after she is a sota and after they're usher to one another, and then he has relations with her, so now he's no longer menukemi na'avon. He's no longer free of guilt, and the water is no longer going to test her. Okay. Huh? Yeah, of course, yes, absolutely. Uh-huh, yes, right. In other words, she's usher with no resolution, which means that it's going to lead to a divorce. Correct.
And then you said that she doesn't drink. The Gemara has discussed why. Whether she drinks, she doesn't drink. She says the past doesn't change.
Right. Correct. And without drinking, the only resolution is going to be divorce.
So why does the Mishnah say that as a matter of status?
It's kind of built into the Mishnah. The Mishnah is assuming all that, and on top of all that, truma. Meaning truma is like the biggest chiddush of them all. In other words, with no resolution, it remains Isser and the Isser Truma as well. That's like Mishnah is just kind of pointing to the top chiddush, if you will. Amar of Amram Hamilsa Amar Lan Rav Sheshes. Rav Amram says, look, Rav Sheshes told us the following: Ven Irla a nine bed Masnisen. And after he told us to speak Chiddush, we look back at the Mishnah and then we realize, oh yeah, you know what? What he said is, you know, it's built into the Mishnah. You have to look carefully in the Mishnah in order to find it, but it's built into the Mishnah. So just for starters, he enlightened our eyes from the Mishnah. You know, the Gemara enjoys sometimes a little bit of irony. Irony over here, of course, is Rav Sheshes is blind, right? One of our two famous blind Amoraim, Rav Yosef, Rav Sheshes, our two famous blind Amoraim. So whenever Rav Sheshes says something and enlightens our eyes, right? It's just a little bit of built-in irony that he's blind, and despite that, he enlightens us. Meaning, okay, that's obviously an impediment, but it doesn't stop him from reaching chidushim. What's the chidush of Rav Sheshes? So let's see it inside. Sota sheyesh la edim b'medina sayam. Let's say she's a sota. Again, most times in the Masechta we say sota over here, we mean unconfirmed. Kinu and stira. There was a warning, there was a seclusion, and that's all we got. But again, with all that, she's usher to her husband. And now she goes to the Beis HaMikdash and she's going to drink the water. Okay, now the water is going to test her. If she walks away with a clean bill of health after having drunk the water, she's good. Go back to your husband. If, on the other hand, she dies, so obviously she was promiscuous in the room. Although we didn't know that, we now know that. Okay, that's a simple test. As we'll see later on this morning, it's not that simple. But in the meantime, however, here's the halacha of Rav Sheshes. If, let's say, there were witnesses, even though those witnesses never stepped forward, we don't know about them. They're Medina Sayam. But they saw the actual act of Tumah. The water will not result in a positive test. Okay?
It could. She's not a subject.
Okay, good. I understand that. But we don't know about the Adam. Even though we don't know about the Adam, if Adam exists with the existence of Adam, so the test is not going to be a valid test. This is a halacha of Rav Sheshes, to which the Gemara says, I'm sorry, first of all, my timer. First of all, how did Rav Sheshes know that? So, Damakrav Nistravihi Nitma Ve'edain Ba. It's actually pshat in the pasuk. The Torah says, she secluded herself, she was defiled, Ve'edain Ba, but nobody actually saw it. Obviously, other than her and the paramour. But nobody else saw it. So, Deleka Diyadaba. That means that nobody else knew about it. La fuke ha da ika di adaba. But over here, if somebody knew about it, even though they didn't step forward, but if somebody knew about it, and somebody over here means a pair of witnesses, if somebody knew about it, so then she's no longer in a position where the water is going to test whether she did or she didn't. Okay, that's the halacha of Sheshes. First of all, Rashi points out over here, you know, it's funny. We're going to, for the rest of today's daf, really, this is it. Meaning, this is, and I already know we're not going to finish today because the Amud Beis is going to be complex. But we'll get to as far as we can get to today. But this is a halacha of Sheshes we're going to be dedicating the rest of today. You know, it's a little bit. Rashi points out it's a little bit strange that we're going to look in the Mishnah, we're going to analyze the Mishnah, dissect the Mishnah, and meanwhile, it's a pasuk in Chumash. Meaning, he arrived at this conclusion with a very simple reading of a pasuk in Chumash. So, why are we going further today? Why not just simply stop at the pasuk in Chumash and say, okay, good, you have a pasuk, it was a good day. A really good day. So, Rashi points out over here. Afa gav de dashina la'el, right, ve'eid ein ba. All right, it's the first wide line of Rashi. Avagav de dashin lael leed echad neeman besota lesota vaday shalotishta od ein mikra yotzei midei pshuto v'dashin lein namihachi. Now Rashi notes that you'll have to remember what we did in the beginning of the Masechta. We also read this pasuk in the beginning of the Masechta for the purpose of a drasha. The drasha was eid ein ba, eid meaning a pair of witnesses. There wasn't the pair of witnesses, but there was one witness. And we learned earlier in the Masechta a huge chiddush, which is that if one witness were to see the act of Tumah, so then she no longer is a Sota Suffix, she's a Sota Vadai, and that's it. All right, story's over. We're not going to the Beis HaMikdash. But Rashi notes, that's the Drush. But there's also the Pshat and the Pasuk as well, which is what Rav Sheshes is learning right now. Ein mikra yotzei midei pshuta v'dashin lein namihachi. Ve'eid ein ba, hu da'amar ve'hevi aisha sishto v'chol ha'parsha. Ha'yesh ba'eid, ein ha'mayin bot kinosa. So really what we have over here is we have Pshat and the Pasuk. So it's that interesting tension between the Pshat and the Pasuk, which is what Rav Sheshes is doing right now, versus the drash that we learned earlier in the Masechta. So even though what Rav Sheshes is really doing is just simply reading the Torah Kipshuto, which is, if nobody knows what happened in that room, then we're going to go to the Beis HaMikdash, and she's going to drink the Mesota. But if somebody knows, even though that person didn't step forward, there's no longer a process of mesota. That's the simple pshat. But as Rashi notes, the Gemara earlier already dealt with this pasuk on a level of drush, and that's why here we go. We're looking to support Rosh Hashanah now using other avenues other than just the pasuk in the Torah.
No, but one second. If it's an enamayim botkim also, because there was some witness that we don't know about that.
Right.
So then it seems to me that every time she takes she drinks the water,
stay tuned.
Nothing happens.
Stay tuned. I hear your question. The Gemara thought of it already. It's a good question, but we'll stay tuned. So the anhirlan einam emasnisan. Now let's go on in the Gemara. The Gemara says that this halacha of Rav Sheshes is already spoken out in the Mishnah. So now that we know the halacha of Rav Sheshes, now what we're going to do is we're going to look back in the Mishnah, read the Mishnah more critically, more carefully, and see that his halacha is actually in the Mishnah. Deitanu shebaal la'edim shi tameya da'asu edim ema. So the Gemara says witnesses came forward and said that she was tameya. That's one of the five cases in the Mishnah where she's asura, right? Mishnah was focusing on chuma, but meaning she was mezana, and we're not going to go any further. So the Gemara says now, when exactly did the witnesses come? Amos, Inema, Mikami Detishte. So when he's suggesting the witnesses came, they came before she drank from the water. I need a Mishnah to tell me that zona he. At that point in time, now she's a zona. Meaning, of course, we're not going to go any further, because right now she's a sota vadais. This whole parsha is only for a woman who only went through kinu and stira. If two witnesses step forward and said, you know, we saw the act of tumah, okay, done. Of course, I don't need a mishnah now to tell me, and we're not going to go through with it. And she's also teaching; she's a zona. So ala labasa dishasai. So it must be the witnesses step forward after she drunk. Now. Here we go. So assuming now, which is what the Gemara is doing, that the witnesses came forward and told us that they saw the znus after she drank the water, so now let's consider. Now, let's assume Rav Sheshes is right. That if there are witnesses in existence in this world, the waters do nothing in terms of testing. The waters will not be a valid test. If that's true, now you understand. It works out perfectly because she drank the water, nothing happened, so now what's the explanation? One explanation is because nothing happened, right? nothing happened because nothing happened,
right?
The other explanation now is, nothing happened to her because there were witnesses and we didn't know about it, and here they are now for the very first time. Oh, now that's another valid explanation. But if Rav Sheshes is not right, so now let's think about this. She drank the water. Nothing happened. That means that she was good. I mean, not really good. She shouldn't have secluded herself with that man, but nothing happened while she secluded herself with that man. And the only thing that would lead us to believe now is that, yes, the witnesses came after she drank, but she drank the water. She walked away from that episode. She must be good. Those witnesses, who am I going to believe right now? Those two witnesses? Or HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name being erased in the water that she drank, which would have led us to a conclusion of what happened in that room? Right, toss up, but we're gonna believe the water over the witnesses. It must therefore be that Rav Sheshes is right. Once there are witnesses out there, the water loses its potency. So the Gemara says, Rav Yosef says, I'm going to argue with Rav Sheshes, and here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to say that the water really is potent. Not like Rav Sheshes. Even though there are two witnesses out there, there really is a potency to the water. And the water really is going to test her. And, now, in terms of she walked away. She drank the water, she walked away. Okay, you know why she walked away? So the Gemara says, Zchus Tol Allah. Okay, perhaps one of the most famous Gemaras in Sota, which is coming up in the early Chaf Tapim, Chaf Aleph, Chaf Beis, is the following halacha, which we're going to spend a little bit of time right now discussing. And that is that there's a possibility that she was a Sota, meaning that, I mean, she is a Sota, but that she actually committed adultery in that room, even though we don't know about it. And it's possible now that she will not die instantaneously. Okay, we will not have instant death in the Beis HaMikdash. But rather, even though the Torah describes instant death, but rather what's going to happen is that there will be a delay. And why is there going to be a delay? So as the Gemara is going to tell us later, she has various zechuyos, included in which is that she learns Torah. Okay, which is, you know, going to be one of the more popular discussions that we're going to have later in the Masechta. But for the time being, there is that possibility. And now, Rav Yosef says to Rav Sheshes, do you know why she walked away from that episode without dying instantly? Because she had a zechus. That's all. And nothing to do with the witnesses, but rather because she had a zechus. Okay. So, to which the Gemara now says, Bamai Kamiflagi. So now we have a basic machlokus between Rav Yosef and Rav Sheshes. And really, to distill the machlokus, the question becomes the following question. She's in the Beis HaMikdash, excuse me, she drinks the water. Now, let's put Rav Sheshes' idea on the back burner right now. Put that aside. Is there a possibility for her to have drunk the water and have not only survived, but basically walk away perfectly healthy, and meanwhile she committed adultery? Is it possible? What Rav Sheshes is arguing is impossible. Again, I have my own idea about Edim being out there in the world, but put that aside. Put aside Edim. Is it possible for her to walk away? Rav Sheshes says, no, it's impossible. Rav Yosef says, it's possible. Because of the schuyz that she accumulated. And the Gemara basically is going to say, this is really the machlokas between Rav Yosef and Rav Sheshes. It's funny, like here we are in the beginning of the Masechta, it's such a basic idea, which is there going to be an immediate response to the water? Rav Sheshes says, basically, yeah, there is. And Rav Yosef says, no, not necessarily. B'misnavna de Rebbe, did not Rebbe Omer. We're going to see this later in the Masechta. Rebbe's of the opinion to Zoche Tola b'mayim hamarim ve'eno yoles ve'eno mishabeches ela misnavna v'holeches l'sof she mesa ba'osa misa. Rebbe's of the opinion that sometimes because of her suchuyos, so there will be a delay of her death. Rebbe's of the opinion, however, even though there will be a delay of the death, she will be symptomatic immediately that she was mezana. That's what Rebbe means when he says misnavna v'holech. Okay, so according to Rebbe now, it's clear that even though there's a delay, there's going to be a delay, but she will be symptomatic immediately, and we will know whether she committed znus or not znus. Rav Sheshes Savar, Bein LeRebbe, Bein LeRabbanan, Havia Misnavne. Now, Rebbe is obviously arguing on another shita. We'll call it the Chachamim. So, according to Rav Sheshes, look, Rebbe and the Chachamim are arguing, but the only argument is whether or not there's going to be a delay. But even according to Rebbe, even though there is a delay, but she will be symptomatic immediately, so the only thing, let me restart that sentence. According to Rebbe, if she committed adultery in that room, we'll know. Even if she doesn't die instantaneously, but she'll be symptomatic. That is Rebbe, that's the way Rav Sheshes understands the machlokus between Rebbe and the Chachamim. Rav Yosef Savar, Le Rebbe Havia Misnavna, Le Rabbanan Lo Havia Misnavna. And Rav Yosef says, no, you're misunderstanding the machlokus between Rebbe and the Chachamim. According to Rebbe, you're right. Rebbe says it, that she will start withering away. Maybe she won't die instantaneously, but she'll be symptomatic, and you'll know. But according to the Chachamim, the zechuyos are such that it can delay the death and delay symptoms as well. So according to the Chachamim, it's possible for her to walk away, even if she committed adultery, and not meet instantaneous death, or not even be symptomatic. Okay. Now, it comes out now that here we have Rav Yosef and Rav Sheshes arguing about whether or not she will be symptomatic or not symptomatic. Now it comes out, just to follow through, I know this bit of Gemara is complicated. It comes out now that according to Rav Sheshes, if she committed adultery in that room, so her zechuyos will delay, according to Rav Sheshes, but only delay, but she will be symptomatic immediately. Therefore, our Mishnah describing witnesses coming forward, and the witness came after she drunk. So Rav Sheshes says, again, or the Talmidim Rav Sheshes say, what do you see from our Mishnah? Even though her own zechuyos will not help her, it'll delay death, but it won't delay symptoms of her death. There is something out there that will that will take away the potency of the water. And that is witnesses. If there are witnesses out there in the world, that will take away the potency of the water. So now, according to Rav Sheshes, when he reads our Mishnah, the only way to interpret the Mishnah, witnesses are coming and the water didn't work. Oh, you know why the water didn't work? Because there were witnesses. It's the only way to read our Mishnah. Now let's go to Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef says, it is possible for a woman to have drunk the water, to have committed adultery, to have drunk the water, and be asymptomatic. And has nothing to do with witnesses. What does that have to do with? Her own zechuyos. Okay, fine. So now when the witnesses come and tell us that that she committed adultery, and even if the witnesses come and told us after she drank the water, so how can we explain that right now she walked away? So her own zechuyos. Okay, so that's the basic machlokas between Rav Sheshes and Rav Yosef. So really, it's almost like there are two separate issues going on. Number one, what will her zechuyos do in terms of her of herself? According to Rav Sheshes, delay death, but not delay symptoms. So if it's just up to her own zechuyos, we will know immediately whether or not she was mezana or she was not mezana in that room. And according to Rav Yosef, no, it's possible that her zechuyos will delay death and delay symptoms as well. And therefore, according to Rav Yosef, it is certainly possible that she did commit adultery in that room, and meanwhile she's going to walk away from that, from the drinking, at least for the time being, with a clean bill of health.
But according to Rav Sheshes, it seems to me that she drinks the water and nothing happens. Oh, there must be witnesses someplace, right? That's what he's saying. So,
okay, again, I hear you. The Gemara is going to ask you a question. Mace of Rav Sheshes, let's just do a little bit more today. I want to get up to the carbon sugya, and tomorrow we'll start the carbon sugya. Mace of Shimon Barashi, Rav Shimon Amarin, Zechus Tola Bamayim Hamarim. Rav Shimon vehemently disagrees with this whole idea. There's no such thing as delay of death. The imata omer zechus tola b'mayim hamarim matcha ata es amayim bifnei kol hanashim hashosos. Rav Shimon says, and this probably entered into every one of your minds as you're reading this, as we're going over this discussion. How in the world could there be a delay? Because think about now this idea that there's a delay. Rav Shimon says it's preposterous. Because if there's going to be a delay, so then the reaction of all other women is, oh really? Who knew? The potency of the water is not immediate. The repercussions aren't immediate. So let's say a woman didn't commit adultery. She drank the water, she walks away. So people are going to say, oh, you know what? Right. She really did commit adultery. And happens to be, I caught her once or twice in the base measure. She was learning Torah. So that's what caused the delay. And vehein omrim tameotayu ala shatalam zechus. People are going to say that really she did commit adultery, but it must be that she has certain zechuyos. Rabbi Shimon just does not accept this whole idea altogether that there's going to be a delay of death. Can't be. So the Gemara says, now, if Rabbi Shimon doesn't like the idea that Torah is going to protect her and delay the death, do you think Rabbi Shimon is going to like the idea of Rav Sheshes? That if there are witnesses out there, somewhere out there, we don't know about them, that's also going to take away the potency of the water. Do you think Rabbi Shimon's going to like the idea of Rav Sheshes? And the Gemara says, basically, of course he's not going to like it. Le Rabbi Shimon kamart? Le Rabbi Shimon midiskus lo talya, eidim nami lo talo. The Gemara's answer is, correct. You're right. If Rabbi Shimon has no tolerance for this idea that her zechuyos are going to protect her, Rabbi Shimon equally is not going to have any tolerance to this idea that the Edom are going to protect her as well. So you're right. This whole discussion of Rabbi Shimon does not exist in the world of Rabbi Shimon. Because Rabbi Shimon has no tolerance for this idea whatsoever. But for the Rebbe and for the Chachamim, who do have a tolerance for this idea that the death may not be instantaneous, so now we have something to talk about. So now we know that there's a delay of death. So again, now we're going to have a basic machlokes between Rav Sheshes and Rav Yosef, whether or not Edom existing out there in the world also are going to be a cause for the impotence of the water. The water loses losing its testing ability. According to Rav Sheshis, it will lose its testing ability, and according to Rav Yosef, it won't. And stay tuned because more on this topic. We got up to the Kachem Sodia.
The Meisera is for the whole purpose is to take the suffix away.
You're good. So, yeah, I understand. Rabbi Shimon is the much easier approach.
Because the husband could always have
a son. I know. I understand. I get it. Okay, let's just quickly recap today. We dealt with the question of why a woman who's a sota suffix. Kinu and stira, why if their husband dies, her brother-in-law needs to do chalitza, not yibum. So to that, Rav Yosef gives three of the similar answers, and then we get to the Kavachomer Rava, and then the Mishnah goes on to say that under five circumstances a woman is going to be Usur. We're not going to go to the base of Mikdash, we're not going to drink the water, five circumstances. And then for the rest of today, which we didn't get through the rest of the daf, but the rest of the day today we dealt with Rav Sheshis' halacha. Rav Sheshis is of the opinion that if there are Edom, even though they never step forward, who saw the act of Tumah, that removes the potency and the testing ability of the water. And the Gemara just concluded that if you are a subscriber to Rabbi Shimon, obviously you will not tolerate this idea. But if you're not a subscriber to Rabbi Shimon, if you're Rabbi or the Chachamim, and that in general there's a concept that there could be a delay of death, so then at least you can now entertain the idea of Rav Sheshis. And for the rest of the daf, which we'll finish off tomorrow, we're going to entertain this idea of Rav Sheshis.